everyone. Welcome to the Feeling Lighter podcast by WeShape, where we are shedding old beliefs one episode at a time, because the bottom line is how you feel about yourself changes everything. I'm here with Dr. Lisa Bolden. Hey. How are you, Lisa?
I am great. How are you?
Good. We've had our next guest on before. I'm really happy to be kind of like ending our recording series with her because she's light. We know what to expect. It's fluid. I love her social account. I was watching one of her videos this morning that I want to talk about. So I'm gonna get into it.
Let's get into it.
Okay. Today we have Colleen Christensen. She's on social as No Food Rules. Colleen is a registered dietitian and my favorite, a non-judgy educator.
Yes.
Here for you to free you from diet culture once and for all. Through her proven no food rules approach to intuitive eating and nutrition, she has helped thousands all over the world break up with dieting, find balance with their eating, and make peace with their bodies. Aww. Hi, Colleen.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here chatting with you guys.
Welcome Same. Back. I know we've had you on before. We're really yes. excited. I love the content that you provide. It's so digestible. It's so relatable. Mm-hmm. I watched your Costco video this morning. Have you seen this one, Lisa?
I did not see that
It's
one.
Where she goes in Costco and she's, it's like, you know, almond mom perspective.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's sort of like no food rules perspective. And like, I was just like, oh, it just felt like light. I think we've talked about almond moms before. For those of us who aren't aware of it, please tell us what that is,
please.
Colleen.
Yes. So it's funny because I feel like this has just kind of gained popularity, I would say, like within the past, I don't know, year and a half or so. And mm-hmm. I actually think it came from one of the Real Housewives, Yolanda. She was like eating almonds and had said, like to her daughter, to only, oh, you know, you're hungry, just snack on a couple almonds. And I feel like that was something. Uh-huh. I mean, I even remember one of my friend's moms as a kid would kind of just pack us like little baggies of almonds. And it kind of just turned into this, not that, you know, almonds are bad, snacking on almonds
right.
totally fine. They're great. But this idea that you should only eat, you know, small portions of things or specific things. And it kind of just kind of went viral. And that's
right.
An almond mom is essentially a diety mom. It's kind of what this mm-hmm. you know name has kind of correlated to. And I think it's just something that a lot of people, it really opened their eyes of like, whoa, like I didn't realize how much of an impact my mm-hmm. upbringing had on me, and also I didn't realize that was, you know, impacting me in a negative way. So I feel like it was truly this like light bulb moment for a lot of people where our eyes were kind of open. And I think a lot of people felt seen with it. And that's why right. it just kind of spiraled and kind of went viral. And I think it's just so relatable. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's fun to create that type of content.
And I like that you do that, you know, from a humorous perspective, but I think it really is like a way of digging into the childhood trauma
yes.
related to why we all dieted and why we all hate our bodies and why we all, you know, tried to undereat and overexercise. So I like that you're shedding light on that whole concept. But if you would talk about some of those effects, like why don't we want to be almond moms now? What is the impact and effect that you've seen with your clients, with yourself, with, you know, friends and people that you know in the community from sort of having that upbringing that was like very diet centric?
Yes. And thank you for talking about the humor. I think that that is something I really try to do with my content. And when we talk about any of these topics, it's because they are heavy topics. They
yeah.
are like
mm-hmm.
when you look at the statistics of my heart, like hurts when I look at the statistics of, you know, girls and their upbringing and how the body image of the mother is reflective of the child and their future, you know, likely negative relationship with food, if that's what the mother has. And mm-hmm. I would just like to say that I never blame anyone who's an almond mom or anyone
right.
who, you know, I don't blame any moms out there. I truly uh-uh. believe everyone is just trying to do their best. And
yep.
now that we are kind of opening our eyes to these things, so if anyone does ever watch any almond mom centric content and be like, oh my gosh, that is me. Like, do not feel shameful over that. Don't feel, you know, shame is just a spiral and it's just going to keep us kind of like stuck in those cycles. So kind of going to your question of why don't we maybe want to be an almond mom is because diet culture is learned, right? I think the statistic was at 6 years old is when girls typically start to feel like they need to be thinner, that they want to go on this. 6 years old. That is just bananas. And I think that the more that we can role model a different way, the more we can protect them from that. And I will also say that you could be the opposite of an almond mom. You can be like the most top tier no food rules mom out there doing your absolute best. We still can't shield kids from all of the other stuff. So I also want people to know that, like, even if, you know, we could do all the quote unquote right things and not being an almond mom, it's still society that we have to deal with. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to create the environments to prevent the impacts of that. And I think that one of the best things that we can do to not be an almond mom is to do the work ourselves, right? Because we were passed on this, you know, relationship with food that probably isn't the best, you know, hello 90s, early 2000s diet culture that a lot of us dealt with. We have to unlearn that and relearn how to listen to our bodies. And through us doing that work, we're then able to role model a healthier relationship with food and to help the younger generations not struggle as much as we did with it. So I think that it goes to, we want to do the work ourselves, but also, you know, heal our relationship with food, but then also we don't want to pass that along.
Yeah. I appreciate that you speak to the shame piece. So I am a previous almond mom.
And
I think that working through that shame was a little tricky, right? And I just encourage us to, you know, again, not be blamey and shamey with ourselves or one another. Like, again, I do really believe. I used to work with a parent educator who used to say parents are doing the best they know how. And and that is so true. And when you know better, you do better. And so just having grace for ourselves and grace for – we'll also be able to extend grace to others once we can learn to do that for ourselves. But – you know, kind of a clue, like looking for those clues is what I, what I'm trying to get to next is I, my children were giving me the clues, but my mind was so shut to them. And, both of my, and that's the other thing is both of my children were giving me clues, but in different ways.
Right.
So my older daughter protested. You're not getting shit by her, by the way. She came to, like, we used to be like, you can't have gluten, right? And she came to me one day and we had discovered she was sneaking it. And I think that I was justified in my perspective and I had my reasons why we weren't going to have inflammatory gluten. And then, you know, air quotes. And then we talked to her about it and she was like, yeah, you put me in jail. And I'm getting out and you can do what you want. But like I you didn't give me the key. So I gave the key to myself. And I was like, oh, shit. Like I am creating disordered eating in this 9-year-old or this 8-year-old, however she was at the time. And in that moment, I had to, I had two paths. Path number one, shame, which then would lead to justification of my narrative even further, which then said you snuck this. You're in trouble. Da 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 da. Or vulnerability. And peeking into my methodology to see if maybe I had missed something. And at which point I was soft enough to say, you know what, Ellie? You are teaching me something really valuable right now. You were in jail. You did try to tell me. I didn't listen to you. And we need to come up with a new path here. And right in that moment. But that was my clue. And she'd actually given me clues along the way. My other daughter gave me very different clues that actually validated my narrative, which were, oh, and she was 3 or 4 at the time. Oh, well, does this have too much sugar in it? And in a way, that shocked me more because the older daughter was protesting and I could kind of be like, well, you're just, you know, I need to be the parent here and come in and set the lay the law. With that one, I was like very bizarre to hear a word like that come out of a 3 or 4 year old's mouth. That actually, even though she was like, I'm like, oh, she's doing what I want. It shocked me when I heard her say that. And in that very moment, too, I was like, oh, you're feeling concerned about sugar. Mm-hmm. We don't need to feel concerned about sugar. Your body needs sugar. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, it just, so anyway, the clues are there, parents. Children are reflective mirrors. They and are. If you can soften and get vulnerable to the fact that we're all doing our best and there's no shame in changing the path, I think that is a really important thing to think about.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that so much. And I think that a lot of us are going to, we have these iterations in our lives. And I think majority of us have had that past to some degree of having a diety mindset in some way. And I think that it can feel strange, almost like an identity crisis sometimes, because a lot of us do put so much of that into, you know, who we
it
are.
It is your identity.
We take it on. And just get curious, even if anyone out there is listening to this and they're like, okay, but I don't like, I still think sugar maybe isn't great for you. Just get curious about it. What if we just said, okay, let me explore this further. I'm not saying you have to totally change your way. And I think that is one of the best pieces of advice that I have to anyone out there who's like maybe on the fence of like, okay, yeah, like I am an almond mom, but like I also don't want to pass along these ideas to my kids, or having that three-year-old talk to me about sugar that was kind of like, whoa. Just get curious, dip your toes in. It doesn't mean we have to go from one side of the spectrum to the other, but the more that we can, I love how you said soften, because that feels less scary than even like change or, you know, redirect. Just soften. Let's just lean into this a little bit more. I love that phrase.
Yeah, that's good. And I had a similar experience, super duper strict and picky. My pantry was only healthy this, healthy that. And my daughter was stealing snacks from friends at school. So we had the whole thing. And I didn't, my initial response was not to soften. It was punishment. It was, how dare you? This is a bad thing. And then it took her like three times doing it for me to realize like, oh, this is a me thing. Like I'm putting something on her that she does not need. And so then my process with intuitive eating and everything shifted as well. So it's been different. But I want to go back to what you said about, like, you know, softening versus like trying to get all the way to the other end of the spectrum, because I think that is scary, right? That change is scary for a lot of people. I certainly rooted my identity in being this fitness girl, this instructor, this health person, this put down the candy bar, pick up the salad. Like, that was me. And it was really hard to sort of break that down and become new. But it's been a really rewarding process. But I think there's so many misconceptions when people say, like, even intuitive eating or health at every size or anything in that realm. People are like, oh, what do you mean? Just sit on the couch and eat cookies all day? And it's like, no, silly. But I don't have the energy to educate everyone every time. I know this is the work that you do, but can you talk a little bit about why you think there's such a misconception of like what intuitive eating is and what like anti-diet is as it relates to food? I know people come to you as a dietitian for like, help me with the meal plan. I want to lose weight. I want to do this. So why do you think there's such a big misconception? And then how do you bring them back to where we really need to be?
Oh my gosh. I totally get why there's such a misconception around intuitive eating. I get it. And there's, we could go down so many different rabbit holes here, but I think there's a couple big ones. There is the fact that social media rises the extreme content to the top. So if I were to post a picture of the, I always use the example, like a turkey sandwich, right? That's not like a sexy meal. that's probably not going to do very well on social media. But if I post a picture of a donut, oh, donut, okay, that's going to rise to the top, right? So these extremist ideas are what rises. And that's typically, you know, eat the donuts, eat the cookies, eat all those things. So when people see intuitive eating, they see all of this, I don't want to say clickbaity content, because I don't think it is clickbaity, but you know what I mean? It's the more extreme types of content that typically get pushed to the top. So I think that when you're just scrolling through your Explore feed or, you know, the suggested whatever platform you're on, those are the things you're going to see. You're not going to see the turkey sandwich that someone had for lunch, because that's not going to get the clicks. That's not exciting. Right. And that's also not to say that people are just posting stuff that are going to get clicks. That's just how the cookie crumbles or the algorithm, what rises to the top. And that's why it's always, I think, important to kind of like scroll through someone's feed just to kind of see like the overall message that someone is giving. So I think that's super important. But then there's also the And then, so on that note, is that a lot of people don't do that more scrolling. So then they just see those things and they're like, okay, that's what it is. And then I think that when people hear the word intuitive, it really means without conscious thought. And so people think, well, if I'm, you know, just thinking of like my gut reaction to things, of course I want to eat the cookies. Of course I want to eat the cake. Of course I want to eat all those things. When in reality, it's so much more than that. It is truly a dynamic process of, I like to say, like mind, body, and soul of what's going to make, yes, my taste buds happy. I call them soul nourishing foods, or what's going to make my body feel good. The word itself, intuitive, doesn't necessarily capture all of those things. Right. So when you just take it for face value of what you're seeing on social media, you don't get the full dynamic process.
We'll be back in just a moment.
We want to make sure everyone knows about WeShape, the company we founded to offer people a different approach to health and fitness. Most health and fitness apps use shame and self-judgment as tools to push you to exercise more so you can lose weight. But at WeShape, we gently guide you towards approaching your workouts as an act of self-care rather than an act of self-judgment. On top of that, we've invested heavily in a technology behind our workouts so we can deliver a personalized workout plan centered around functional movements you can do from home that will help you feel better in your body. If you want to try WeShape out for free, click the link in our podcast description or go to weshape.com/free, where you can build your first workout and activate your 2-week free trial.
And now back to the Feeling Lighter podcast.
That truly goes into it. And I think there is, I guess, a third one that I would say is that, unfortunately, there is a lot of people on social media who are taking the non-diet space and kind of corrupting it and using it because it is trendy, right? It is something that people can feel like they can kind of like lean into. And it's just so unfortunate that people kind of corrupt it in that way. Mm-hmm. But it is something that can kind of get skewed a lot of times for kind of like personal gain. So I get why there is that misconception with people. And I always kind of like explain it just in that way if I were to talk to someone. And I always say, A, intuitive eating is going to look like something different to every single person. I want it to be every single day. And it should be something to you that makes you feel good both mentally and physically. And that is what we're trying to get to here. And you get to decide what that looks like. And I think when you also allow someone to realize like, oh, so like I get to decide what that looks like to me. You're not telling me this is what intuitive eating should look like. It gives someone a little bit more empowerment. Their guard tends to come down and then they're open to learning more about it versus just, this is what you should do. This is, you know, how it should be. It becomes more freeing.
Yeah. I would like to put some language to, you know, I've only been a couple years on this journey. And so I still really am undoing some of the work I did, especially with my oldest child. And so I'd love to throw out an example to you and you can provide me feedback if you feel up for it. So my older daughter tends to choose the categories of food is very limited. They tend to fall in a one macronutrient category all the time. And so the way I used to parent, the almond mom version of me was like a lot of rules and no, 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 no. And now I've tried to flip that on its head and say, oh, I'm so happy you chose that. Also remember, can you make sure you go find something that has protein? Can you make sure that you find something that, like, can we make sure we also bring in other things too, rather than saying you can't have the thing that you have? I've been saying, oh, that was your choice. Great choice. Can you also make sure throughout the day you're picking other choices too, so we're not just having the one thing, because your body actually needs a variety of things in order to be feeling at its best. Do you have some critiques for me on that language?
I love this topic. And I actually feel like I've been doing a lot of this kind of topic this week, talking with people, one of my friends. And I think one of the best things that you can do is explain what the different foods do in our bodies and why we need those different foods, and focusing more on what foods do versus what foods maybe we, you know, quote unquote, shouldn't eat. So for example, if we're talking about like sweets or something like that, kind of explaining, okay, you know, this is what this cupcake is going to do to our body. It's going to give us a quick, you know, burst of energy, but maybe we won't feel full for super long. But, you know, protein, if we pair some protein with that, that could allow us to feel full longer, and explaining it in that way. And I've also had this idea that I will recommend some people, depending on the kid's age. Obviously, all of this also depends on, like, your kid's age, what specific language you use, how, you know, in depth to get with things. But one thing you can actually do with your kids is, I kind of like the word, like, snack experiment. Like, maybe one day you have a, you know, just something that's just a sweet, and you say, okay, let's see, you know, how long this keeps us feeling full for. Does it feel different to our body than something, you know, this other snack, maybe something with, you know, some whole grains and some fiber, and not only focusing on that, but also then, yes, getting into like a little bit of mindful eating practices. And the more that you can do those things with your kids and explain those things, sometimes we have to, I don't want to say let them fail, but let them have firsthand experience of something not keeping them full for super long, so they know. And, you know, realizing, okay, again, I think whether it's kids or adults, having that firsthand of like, I actually felt how this felt, because it's different when you say, oh, mom told me, you know, having some protein is going to help me feel full, but, you know, pish posh, whatever. But when they feel like, oh my gosh, I actually did get hungry super fast, maybe mom's on to something, that's when they learn. So I think it's a balance of guiding, but then also allowing them to kind of have those learning experiences for themselves.
Yeah, I know when we first started this journey, I remember one time she really went for it. And I just let it happen. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, whatever you need. And then she started throwing up. And she was like, I think I had that too quickly, or like she kind of was able to. And of course, it's hard as a parent. I don't want to see my kids sick. But it was a, it was an opportunity for learning for all of us, that like, and for her specifically, like, this was good, but I took it too far and I don't feel good as a result. And I didn't have to actually do anything except allow for the experience, which is often.
I was like, that's the hardest part. We want to protect them from all of that stuff. So it's like, if you could just listen to what mommy is telling you and don't do it, it'll be fine. But we do have to let them have those experiences. But as a parent, that has been my hardest part. Like, because sometimes they need repeated experiments and repeated exposure and repeated, like, the same thing happening over and over. So as a parent, I'm like frustrated, like, okay, you're not getting the connection here. What do I need to do to help you get there? But and it is a part of their process.
And I think if any children have any type of neurodivergence, this gets really complicated because children with neurodivergence have a lot of sensory inputs. And like, I know for my daughter, she won't even recognize cues from her body. There sometimes is like this disconnection. And I have to almost like remind her, like, the human body needs sleep and water and food to just stay alive. And because it's like the cue happened 6 hours ago, but she didn't feel the sensation. And then here we are, right? And so it's a tricky water to navigate. But I think just the lens of like this idea of like non-judgy, we're not creating rules. We are trying to get in touch and in tune with how we feel. And I think you're making an incredible point. So even if you don't have kids and you're listening to this, is like, how do we do this ourselves? And, you know, my dad has said for years, he has this like, my dad loves like his little sayings, but he always says like, more is caught than taught, you know? So this idea of like continuously just working on yourself will be what it takes in order to model for others. So I appreciate you bringing that up. But I have, I mean, your work has really inspired me to, I mean, just this non-judgment.
I'm glad.
Like, that is the, that is the, that is the core for me, that all of this diet culture is rooted in judgment. And I don't want my kids judging others, and I don't want them judging themselves, and I don't want to judge myself anymore. And if we can just kind of go back to that, like, is this decision or this thing that I'm thinking rooted in judgment? And if it is, it's time for a shift.
Absolutely. And on the topic, I want to go back on neurodivergence. I was just working on a course on ADHD, and it's just so fascinating. And I think that's a specific example of how intuitive eating is going to look different for everyone. Some people need more of a structure to things, and some people need more of reminders. And that's okay. That's going to look different for every single one. And understanding yourself enough to know that I am someone who tends to eat for stimulation. I mean, this, whether you're an adult or a child, whether you have ADHD or not, I think a lot of us, when we start to understand why we're doing things, and again, in a shame-free way, rather than saying I'm eating for stimulation or a dopamine release or anything like that, or I'm binge eating because I went all day forgetting to eat, rather than letting yourself get in that shame spiral, understanding why is this happening and doing that judgment free, it's going to allow you to actually work through those things in a way that is going to actually be beneficial to you. Because shame is just going to cause more negative feelings. That's just going to make us want to go to food for comfort even more. And it's just this spiral that continues.
Yeah, it sounds like neutralizing these behaviors and then getting curious as to why we're doing them, instead of saying like, oh, I'm emotionally eating. I'm so bad. I'm so stupid. I should be doing it. We don't get anything good from that. So I love that you're saying that. I want to go back to the intuitive eating piece, because I think, you know, like you said, you understand why people have the misconception. But we're on this spectrum of like daily free for all, like every day wake up and eat whatever I want to eat, no questions, no consequences, no comments, and then like the other end of the spectrum, living this extremely restrictive diet. Where does intuitive eating like really land, and then how do you help your clients sort of create that balance, if you will, for themselves?
Absolutely. And I always like to say, you can wake up and do whatever the heck you want. If you want to go to Costco, buy 3 cakes and eat them all, go for it. My question to you, is that what you want to do? Like, you can do that if you want. Is that going to feel good? Is that what you genuinely want to do? Or do you like the idea of it? And I think that a lot of the time we like the idea of those things.
The permission.
Of being like, of being like, I can do this now. Or, you know, I don't know if you've walked past the Costco bakery lately, but oh, you walk past there and you get a smell of that frosting and it is like heaven.
I can smell it now.
Right? It's like, oh my gosh, I want that. But then when you put it into the doing of it, you're like, maybe that doesn't actually sound so good. Right. And I think,
sometimes it does. I've had that happen a lot too. Like, oh, does this sound good? Or do I? And then it's like, oh, it does. And then a lot of times, oh, it doesn't. Right.
And then you get to decide how much of that sounds good. Again, if you want to go and eat as much as you want, you absolutely can. You're the one who gets to decide all of those things. So I think that giving yourself that permission to decide. And again, going back to all of those things, let's take into consideration our, you know, thoughts, our feelings, our mind, body, our soul. And sometimes it's not always an even triangle between all those things. Sometimes it's like, I have this craving and I want to enjoy this cake. Maybe it's a birthday party and it's celebration. I'm not necessarily hungry and that's okay. And then other times, maybe you're like, I really don't feel like eating that because I'm not hungry. It's not necessarily an even balance of all those things. They're going to ebb and flow. But when we can tune into all of them, that's how you find the balance. That's how you find that even middle ground between just, you know, eating all the things all day long, having these food rules, and it becomes so much more of a effortless balance because you understand where your decisions are coming from. You understand how it makes you feel. It's just so much easier when you can do it from that side of things versus either of the extremes. I always say living in the gray and this kind of like balanced quote unquote area, it's not sexy. Like it feels
so weird,
right? It does, but it's going to be the thing that's going to take the most mental load off you, because you got other things to worry about, living your life. And oh my gosh, it is. Whew, you're going to save so much. I always tell people, you better get some hobbies because you're going to have so much more time on your hands and mental bandwidth.
You don't even know how much energy and mental load you put to it until you're not doing it anymore. And then you're like, I literally felt like I actually felt empty space in my mind where I was like, you don't have to think. And like my priorities shifted so much from exactly what I was eating to, you are feeling hungry. You haven't eaten in a number of hours. Like, how can you be better prepped for tomorrow because you felt so bad that you waited so long? And the older version of me was like, oh, you intermittent fasted and you did this. And it's like, oh my God, that is so – anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, it's actually funny where you land because it's not where you think you're going to land. Like,
not at all.
Like, you know, I used to – like, oh, I have to eat this, I have to eat this. And now it's like so funny where I just land. I land in a pretty balanced place of like pretty equal protein. Like I just land there. And I don't even have to use the mental load to get there. And before, I used to have to force myself. Well, how does this have protein? Does this have protein? Does this
measuring
have protein?
Measuring and planning. And
what, now like... I don't. I get enough protein, but I'm not even trying to get enough protein. I just want it, and then I just eat it, and it's just like effortless. And it is a journey. So I think giving yourself kindness and grace, because I think we all go straight to the, oh, I have permission. I am going to eat all of that now. And that's okay. It is part of the journey. But the biggest thing for me was the mental load and the mental liberation I got from walking away from diet culture, walking away from food rules.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, that was the thing for sure. It's about creating like a freedom that I just never experienced. And we talk about this on other episodes. I think part of it always goes back to childhood, right? I definitely grew up in chaos. And for me, safety looked like structure. Mm-hmm. Safety looked like rules. Safety looked like yeses and nos, black and white, all or nothing. This gray thing was extremely challenging for me to navigate, because how do I know I'm safe there? Mm-hmm. And so letting go of food rules has been such a process, but it's really been liberating. So I'm grateful for the journey. But I know that, you know, Lisa 20 years ago would be like, what is wrong with you? Like, what are you doing? Why have you let yourself go? Get yourself back together. Get back on the diet. Get back to counting calories. And now I know, like, I would never want to live that life again.
And so, like, I just feel like even my relationship with my children has improved on this one thing. You know, we recently did this thing. I highly suggest it. We did a yes day for our kids.
Oh, my God. Oh my kids have been begging for this. And I've said no.
Yeah. Well, I joked with him the next day. I was like, today's a no day. No, I'm kidding. But like, I think that it's the same type of mentality. Right. We think that they're going to go crazy. Mm-hmm. And they didn't go crazy at all. They picked the same things we do all the time. And I was like, you guys have permission. Okay. But it was so great for them to see their mom and dad. Like, they picked, of course, they picked a lot of fun things that we could go do, and a lot of things that, you know, that were involved in, like, an older version of myself would have been like, we're not eating that. We're not going to that place. And we just went and we had the best time. And our relationship benefited from it.
Okay, I'll do it. No.
Our relationship did. But my point is that, like, my old self would have been like, it's a yes day, but we're not going to this restaurant. We're not eating this thing. And I would have let the food get in the way of having, and guess what? That would have interrupted my ability to connect with them. And we know the research on what people really value at the end of their lives. And it's not the diet that they did. It's the quality of the relationships they have with people.
Yep.
And food rules interferes with the ability to have the depth and the quality of the relationship that you want. And it deeply impacts your relationship with your children, whether you want to see it or not. And so it's like, if you want to remove the barriers and have that quality relationship, if we know the research says this is the most important thing at the end of one's life, the food rules get in the way. So just your Instagram handle alone, no.food.rules, no food rules, is an opportunity and permission to deepen and strengthen those connections with our children, with our loved ones, with our friends, because it gets in the way and we don't even know it.
Mm-hmm. Could not agree more. Beautifully said.
So, well, Colleen, before we let you go, we got to ask the big question around here, which I'm sure you have dozens of these answers, but what is a belief that you once had that you no longer have that has really impacted your life in a meaningful way?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. I think honestly, one of the biggest things is that I would have to say you are enough. Like, I am someone who has always struggled with just not feeling, I think a lot of people can relate to this, and especially I feel like it's just gotten worse with social media, that we're not enough and we're always striving for something else. And I think that can play into a lot of times food rules, right? Because we are trying to exert more control or do better at something we feel like we can exert this control over. But when you, and I think that's a key process of part of the process of making peace with both food and your body, is truly understanding that you are enough as you are. That doesn't mean you can't want to make improvements in yourself. That doesn't mean that you can't want to change things in your life, but knowing at your core that the way that you are today is enough, and you have inherent self-worth just being who you are, I think is huge. And I think that that has allowed me to not only break free from food rules, but to come into this space and to feel like I can, you know, show up on social media every single day. And there's lots of haters, let me tell you what, but understanding that you truly valuing yourself. I think that is just not looking for this external validation and just knowing that you are enough just as you are.
I love that.
That's so good.
Thank you so much. Where can our listeners find you and tell us about your app? Because I'm in your app. It's an incredible, I know you just launched this. So tell everyone about it.
Yeah. So you can find me at no.food.rules, Instagram, TikTok, Colleen Christensen on YouTube. And then my app. Yes. Oh my gosh. We launched, I have had a membership for years now. We launched it as an app in just January of this year. And we're continually, I'm absolutely loving it. Just figuring out what is the easiest way that I can get this information to people, the way that it's going to fit into your everyday life, and just rolling out new features to not only give you step by step, it's all bite sized. Everything is 5 minutes or less for you to do, fits into your day super easily. And just figuring out new tools that you can literally have at your fingertips to help you not only get to this place where you know how to eat with no food rules, but to help maintain that. And I'm just having the most fun with continuing to create these tools. And you can download it for free. You can take a 2-minute quiz, get a customized plan for you based on what you struggle with. Because the reality is some people struggle, I always say, you're not the same as your neighbor. You might need different advice. Some people struggle with more of the physical restriction side of things. Some people struggle with more of the overeating side of things, or more of the, what I call the mental food rules, the food morality rule. Maybe you don't physically restrict yourself, but we still have those ideas of good and bad food. Everyone is different. And when you can approach your journey with what you need, that is typically when people start to think like, okay, the light bulb is starting to go off. I get it. And that's exactly what the app does. So you can download it for free, get in there, check it out. But also the creative side of me is just loving it. It's so fun to create things from ground up. So yeah, thanks for asking.
Absolutely. We'll put that in the show notes. Check out our app, check out our social. It's one of my favorite Instagram accounts online.
Thank you.
We will see all of you next week. Thank you so much, Colleen.
Yes, bye-bye. Thank you for having me. Enjoy as always.
Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed today's show. Now, before you go, it would mean a lot to us if you could take a moment right now to subscribe to the podcast and then leave us a review. This helps spread the word so more people can feel lighter by shedding one belief at a time. Also, we want to hear from you. So if this episode impacted you, or you have any questions that you think would be great for us or any of our future guests, please feel free to email us at podcast@weshape.com. And finally, if you want to try WeShape's different approach to health and fitness, make sure you click the link in our podcast description or go to weshape.com/free, where you can build your first workout and activate your 2-week free trial. See you next week.